Welcome to Beauty and the Brain with your hosts, Dr. Chris Crowley and nurse practitioner Jerry Drinkard. Get ready to dive into the latest in revolutionary treatments, cutting-edge devices, and wellness secrets. Whether you're a consumer or provider, we're here to empower you at the forefront of beauty and aesthetics.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. And together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, a med spa that's located here in Pace, Florida. So we're joined today by Lori McDowell, and she is very educated, chemical engineer. There's a whole list of things here that we could talk about, author, entrepreneur. And so she and Chris met recently, and we'll talk a little more about how you met. And she's one of your peeps from a recent little rendezvous that you did in Tulsa.
Yeah. So I was excited to meet Lori, but I didn't know all the wonderful things about you actually until I was looking up a little bit for the podcast. I didn't know you're a chemical engineer. Somehow I'm this.
I guess I could go by Dr. Lori if I wanted to, because I actually have a PhD.
I saw that. I'm like, my Lord, she's like a lot more educated than you. You kind of downplayed that on the blocks. So tell us a little about yourself, Lori.
Sure. Yeah. So I worked in the chemical industry for about 30 years as a chemical engineer. I worked in marketing and research and development and sales and business development and a lot of different areas. And a few years ago, I ended up leaving that industry. That's a story in itself, and decided I was going to do something different. And I didn't know what I was going to do exactly, but I knew I wanted to do something that maybe made a different, you know, something that made people a little happier than being a chemical engineer does, something where I could affect people's lives. So the first thing I did was I decided to write a book, because I always wanted to write a book and never really had the time. So I wrote a book called The Reinvention Mindset. And as I wrote that book, it was kind of my own journey, figuring out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I ended up becoming a coach, taking some business coaching, some life and mindset coaching certifications. And after I did that for a little bit, put it all together, I realized I really loved traveling and I loved working with other people and helping them get incredible experiences. So I've recently started doing retreats, and particularly done-for-you retreats, where I do all the legwork, the logistics, help coach them through the whole process, set everything up. And the people that host the retreats really just show up and be magical.
Fun. You know, I think one of the reasons, there's several things I connected with you on. First of all, our listeners are very diverse. And so we started this podcast really with a business mindset. And we were going to do this for med spa entrepreneurs. So people who are really interested in going and opening their own business, transitioning from traditional health-based practices or, you know, the hospital-based setting. And we found quickly that we had a lot of patients and clients that were listening to this. And it wasn't necessarily just the business people that were tuning in. And they were interested in aesthetics and wellness and things to do with their overall health. And so our audience was way more diverse than we originally intended, and we kind of had to shift gears. So I think there's several things interesting about having you on as a guest. One is your entrepreneur and your business background. But two, I think what appeals to our bigger, broader audience is looking at reinventing yourself, exactly what your book talks about, and how you go from one point in your life where you think things may be looking down, or it's not exactly the plan that you had in mind, the retirement that you planned from 30 something years as chemical engineering, but all of a sudden you find something better and more exciting. And I think you told me, you're like, it's not really even like work, because you love what you do so much that it's like you don't even have to think about retirement, because you're loving and enjoying this chapter in your life so much more than you ever planned. When I heard that story and I was thinking about it, I was like, that really is so many people that we see day to day in our practice. They're going through transitions, changes, moving into different phases and chapters of their life. And sometimes when there's some sadness associated with closing that chapter, there's also a lot of excitement with what lies ahead. And so I want to talk about a couple of things, and maybe we'll just start with your book, and then we're going to eventually get into your business and your retreat planning, and then maybe talk about how some of our listeners, if they want to plan a retreat, or maybe even for us, we can plan a retreat, where we could do that and what that would look like. So with your book, I have to be honest, I did not know that you had written the book. And from the time we left the show until now, I haven't had a chance to read it. But I did see that you wrote it, and I read the summary of it. But really, what was it that made you think about the title, and what were you going to write about in terms of reinventing yourself?
If I can go back a little bit and just tell you how I ended up leaving corporate, I had a job that I had worked at for 11 years, and I was the highest technical woman in the company. I was the face of the company at conferences, and my boss retired. Everyone thought I would take over his role. I didn't, and they brought in this guy who was younger and very transactional, and working for him was miserable. And I said, you know what, I'll do it anyway. A few more years and I'll retire. My son was still in college. And then one day we had a sales meeting that was 4 hours away. And I drove to the meeting. I was on the call that morning with a customer that I had just brought in, the biggest customer this company ever had. My boss was on the call. And when I got to the hotel, they told me my room had been canceled. And I met with my boss and they fired me and told me, we'll pay you to the end of the day, go home. So I had just drove 4 hours to get fired. It's like, I don't know who does that. A little bit crazy. But it was on that way home, you know, first you're going through anger and fear and all these emotions. But about halfway home, when I realized I didn't have to go to work anymore, it was like a weight was lifted off my shoulder. And I was like, I don't have to go to work anymore. And right then and there, I said, I'm not going to work for someone else anymore. I'm going to do something important. I'm going to live my purpose and do something where, you know, that I love. And that's when I decided to write the book. And it came from the fact that there are people I met who had horrible things happen to them. And yet instead of, you know, there are a lot of people that they have horrible things and they let it ruin their life. They let it affect them. There are other people that have horrible things happen to them and they turn it around. They go out and they do something amazing. Like one of the people I talk about in my book, she was like 30 years old and she was diagnosed with MS. She had like 29 of the 31 symptoms. She was in a wheelchair and the doctors all told her, this is going to be the rest of your life. And she decided that she wasn't going to accept that. And she, you know, made herself into a guinea pig and tested everything, nutrition and anything she could think of, any kind of holistic practice. And now you would never know it. She's vibrant. She's amazing. And she started a nonprofit that helps other people diagnosed with, you know, autoimmune disorders and helps them see if they can change their life. So she was kind of the inspiration. So the title really came from a reinvention mindset, because reinvention is what people do. And it's the mindset that, you know, you can't help what happens to you, but you don't have to accept it. You can decide what you're going to do with it. You can decide what the rest of your life is going to be like. And I interviewed a lot of, you know, four or five other people, and they all had a lot of things in common. Things like they all believed in themselves. They were all willing to ask for help when they needed it. They all had felt there was some kind of higher power, whether it was God or a creator or, you know, the universe, but they all realized that they were connected with the rest of the world and a few other things, but that's really how the book came about.
So I noticed in one of the summary things I was reading about it is you encourage people to sort of reframe their thought process or reframe the way that they look at fear. Can you kind of briefly or not briefly, walk us through how you have people go through that process?
Yeah. Fear is really, you know, fear was meant to be a warning sign for us. You know, fear was supposed to be like, you know, back in before we were, you know, lived in cities and all, you know, you see a tiger and you get afraid and then you take action and you do something. But now fear has gotten to the point where instead of seeing something that's dangerous and doing something about it, we tend to stay there. We live in that fear. And that kind of puts us in that state where we're always kind of, you know, in fight or flight or a state of anxiety. And the problem is most of our fears are not based on, you know, a tiger. There's something it's not necessarily real. It's not necessarily, you know, it's the likelihood of it occurring is probably very low. But because we don't really think about it, we live in that fear. And in the book, you know, one of the people I talked about, we had a conversation about how fear is really the opposite of, you know, it's like success on one side of the coin and fear on the other. And if you stay in that fear, you never really get to see the other side of the coin. You're just living there. So you kind of have to, you know, look at what you're afraid of and ask and face it. Figure out, why am I afraid of it? What's the possibility that it's really going to happen? You know, we always say, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? But you also have to say, well, what's the best thing that could happen? If I do face that fear, what are the good things that could happen? And most of the times, the probability of the fear happening are very low. And the good things that could happen are so much better than the bad ones, that when you look at the fear that way, it just goes away, or you just feel like, okay, well, I can handle that. It's not so bad. And there's so much upside.
Now, has this always been your philosophy, your thought process, or was this something that you had to do yourself?
I think I've had a lot of it in me, particularly like when I was in high school. My sister was in a car accident, and she was in a coma for 3 months, and she still has, you know, she has brain damage for her whole life. And back then, I realized that, you know, life was not guaranteed. You never know what's going to happen. So I've always kind of had that philosophy of living something. I mean, when I applied for the blocks, it was like, why not? It sounds fun. Having no idea what was involved. So I've always, you know, at least since I was in high school, have, you know, tried to live my life of, you know, just jumping in first and asking questions later.
Speaking of the blocks, how did that come about for you?
You know, I was just scrolling through Facebook one day and I saw an ad, and it's kind of funny. There's a chapter in my book where I talk about your why. And one of the things I put in, you know, and I talk about how your why doesn't always have to be something you're proud of. And one of the things I put in was that I always wanted to be famous. So I thought, oh, a reality show? Sure, sounds like fun. I have no idea what it is, but I'll pop in and apply. And I had no, you know, and I left, they said 60,000 people apply and you probably won't make it. I was like, oh, I'll never make it. So I was completely shocked when I was, you know, got to the next step and then the next step.
How many times did you see the ad before you made a decision?
You know, I think I only saw it once.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's interesting when I talk to people, because a lot of times they fall right into that traditional kind of business touch point where you talk about people needing to see it 6, 7, 9 times before they make a decision. We had one other guest that I found very inspirational on this morning. I don't know if you remember Sam from Combat Syndicate, but I found his story inspirational as well. And he was on this morning, but it was funny because he had to click on it several times before he actually decided to go forward with it. So being on the blocks, what was the experience like for you?
How was Chris's pod for you?
Oh, Lord.
That's what he wants to know. How was Chris's pod?
Chris's pod was great because I won it. The whole experience was so much better than I mean, I really didn't know what to expect. You know, I did watch some episodes, but when you're watching the episodes, you're seeing, you know, like any reality show, you're not seeing the real thing. You're seeing the highlights. So I didn't know what to expect. And it was great. I mean, it was just, I learned a lot, and the people there were amazing. The coaches were great. Chris was obviously the best one, but...
Yeah, let him know that he lives in my pod every day.
That's what I was telling Sam earlier, is that I live in that pod.
It was a lot of fun for me. I discussed it with him earlier. It was actually, I think, more challenging for me going back kind of as a coach or a judge than it was when I was a participant, because then we were only focused. There was a different kind of anxiety around that. Jerry and I were there together, but we were just really kind of competing and learning about our business model. And it was a very small subset of our bigger business overall that we were there for. And for me, being back as a judge, I was really concerned of what I would be able to give back. And so I found that I did more preparation for this than I did when we actually went to compete with our business.
That makes sense.
Now, you wrote your book. Obviously, you did some reinvention yourself. You did some self-work, and now you've got this wonderful company that I'm fascinated with, where you help people plan these done-for-you retreats. What that's like for you as an owner of that type of company? Because you must get to participate in some pretty cool experiences.
Part of it, you know, I love traveling. I love experiences. You know, if I were a multimillionaire, billionaire, I would probably just go to retreats and it would be fun. But I realized even when I went to retreats as an attendee, my mind was always like thinking about, oh, how could this be better? What could we do? You know, what could we change? What would I improve on? And that's just something that I love. And that's kind of my superpower, is the planning phase. I mean, even at the blocks last week, I'm thinking, oh, they should, you know, how would I, if I were doing it, what would I rearrange? And I realized that for me, I just thought the planning and the details and working with that was something that I did. But then I realized that it's something that a lot of people don't like to do or don't enjoy, and it's something that has value because there are people that don't have to do it. So I just looked at, so rather than just, teaching people retreats or hosting retreats, I can actually do the retreat, do the planning, help with the agenda, help with the location, do everything for the person who's going to host it, go to the event and support them there, help them out whatever they need. And it's great because I get to travel, I get to attend retreats, I get to see people get great experiences, which is something I love. And I can affect more, I can help more people that way. Because if I'm going to host my own retreats, I have to fill my own retreats. And that's, I can maybe do a couple a year, but I'm not going to do them every month. Whereas if I'm doing it for other people, I could probably do one or two a month, and then I could have, hire people to expand that. So it really has a bigger impact as well.
Now, your own personal retreats, what are they focused on? Is more mindset coaching?
I started doing them for mindset coaching, and I've kind of now I kind of just do things that I think would be interesting or fun. Like I'm doing one in November, and it's a I call it Plunge into Possibilities. We're actually going to an island called Utila off the coast of Honduras. Like I'm going to incorporate scuba diving. We could actually dive with whale sharks there, and we're going to do some exercises. But this one will be more, adventure, fun. We will do some mindset work, and we'll probably have a mastermind there. And I may even let people do, kind of have a JV pitch where they can tell about their business and see if anyone wants to support them or work with them. So that one's more less mindset, Roxy, shush, more kind of fun and adventure and just how to support your business. I have an idea for another one that I haven't set up yet, but I want to do it. And I actually talked to Stephanie, who was on the blocks with the dog training company, that I want to do a retreat for dogs and their people, and actually put together, work exercises you can do with your pet and ways that you can the dogs can get connect as well. So so sometimes they're about mindset coaching or changing your life, but they all are based on the idea that, reinvention, reimagination, you can create whatever you want. It's always in your power, and you can make it fun because I think life should be fun.
So what's the strangest retreat that you've done for someone?
One, I don't know if if it's necessarily strange, but it was strange to me. I did a retreat for a ghostwriter, and it was a writer's retreat. And what was really interesting was there wasn't like a whole lot of activity. It was like they all just, we got all came together in a beach house, and there was maybe like an hour's worth of planned activity in the day. And the rest of the time, they just sat there and wrote. So it was kind of like, it was a great experience, but like they're all sitting there writing, and I'm supporting this. And it's like, well, I don't have a lot, there's not a lot for me to do. So that was kind of different, just because usually retreats have, yoga and or
Yeah, different thing.
let's go interact with animals, or let's go for a hike. And this one was a lot of just kind of sitting around and writing.
I think the retreat with your pet is huge because so many people aren't able to even travel if they have pets because they're limited by places that accept animals or they're limited by pet sitters. They don't want to leave their pets for long periods of time, and they're such a big part of all of our lives. And what better way to have a retreat than with your pet and learn how to incorporate them into things that are healthy, not just enjoying their company, but your exercise, your meditation, or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I have a feeling there'll be a lot of people that want to come to that, and I may have to do it on a regular basis once I do the first one.
Jerry wants to do one like the first time I told him about you, he was like, let's do one with her at the farm.
Yeah.
I think that your farm sounds like a great place for a retreat.
We have to stabilize the animals first. Right now we're in a bit of a crisis mode, but
yeah, we're having a sheep crisis, but it's still like, even with that, it's just a place that makes you feel good to be there.
The one that you're talking about coming up, that sounds like a lot of fun in Utila. So it's actually one of my favorite places that I've been. I've been there. I went on a diving trip there many years ago. Here's my little fur baby. She hangs out at the office with us. I was going to have her say hi. This is Chloe. She's a little mini swan. Oh, you want to kiss? I heard your baby there. I was like, yeah, we're used to like noisy pups whenever somebody rings the doorbell. She comes to the office and she's usually pretty chill with us. But yeah, I went there probably, it may have been 15 or 17 years ago, and I went on a diving trip with one of my good friends, and we started out in Roatan and then went on a boat, a small boat, and kind of went throughout the whole Bay Islands area. We did get to dive with whale sharks. We did go while we were there to the Blue Hole, but it was quite the experience. I think you'll have a great, I can't wait to hear about it. But
Yeah, I've been there a long time ago. I've been there twice, probably, 20 years ago as well. And both times I didn't get to dive with whale sharks because it was the wrong season, but I did witness a coral spawning at night, which was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I mean, it was just like these rocks suddenly like let out thousands of baby corals, and suddenly the fish come in attacking, and it was like being in another world.
I didn't know. Somehow I missed that you were a diver the whole time that we were there together. So I was able to get Jerry into diving a while back, and we did an amazing dive trip. We were in the French Polynesia. So we did like Tahiti, Bora Bora, Fakarava, those areas. And we did some drift diving. And I'm fairly experienced with a dive instructor in college.
I'm fairly inexperienced.
It's only warm water, Caribbean, like nice swimming pool type stuff. And then we went on this drift dive with sharks in French Polynesia. And he was terrified out of his mind. He said it was exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time.
Yeah, well, it's a combination of, like, diving is a combination of two things that I wouldn't say necessarily a phobia, but fear. And, like, I have a crazy respect for water. I'm not going to say I'm fearful of water, but I don't feel that I'm a very strong swimmer. And so I do have a little fear of water. I'll say that. And then I'm also pretty claustrophobic. And so I was not excited about becoming certified to dive, and Chris encouraged me, and he always pushes my limits. And so I did my dive certification while we lived in Chicago. And then I did my, water portion in Grand Cayman. I was like, I lost a word. And so it was literally like diving in an aquarium. The water was nice. It was warm. And once I got like beneath the water, I thought it was the most relaxing, the thing that I thought I was going to be so afraid of, and being able to like just hear yourself breathe. And there was something about the claustrophobia that I never thought about again. Like it just went away.
Clearly you've had a lot of different experiences in life, but coming from a PhD background in chemical engineering, being in a technical role, leading conferences, to now being the CEO of your own company and developing really kind of this fun experience for individuals. I want you to tell me a little bit about what that's like, what that looks like from the consumer side, because we have clients and we have patients and we have listeners that would be interested in having their own sort of retreat. And I think people feel that this is so far-fetched, so out of reach, that they would never think that, hey, I can call someone and they can plan this for me, and it's actually cost effective and reasonable, and it can be really of any interest. It can be around yoga or aesthetics or business planning, any of those things, really, ghostwriting, you just said. So this wide range of professionals could have these retreats, but they don't even know where to start. So what does that process look like if they use someone like you?
Yeah, the process really starts with getting to know you, your vision, your business, your purpose. What do you want a retreat to look like? Because there are so many. The important thing about a retreat is that you go somewhere away from the day-to-day. And it doesn't have to be Fiji or far away. It could just be, an Airbnb an hour from your home or something. But you get people out of their everyday place and into a place where they can be, they can think, they can connect with nature, they can connect with each other. So the process is we start and, we kind of look at what's your vision. Do you like beaches? Do you like mountains? Do you like lakes? Do you want something historical? What are you excited about? I'm talking to someone who was thinking about doing like a quilting retreat because for people that quilt and they something like that. So it can really be about anything, but once I learn what they're looking for, and what kind of budget do they have, what do they, because if you can do a retreat where it's a couple days and people pay a couple $1,000s a person, and you can do a retreat that's $20,000 a person and anything in between. So figuring that out. And then what I do is I kind of look at, based on that vision and those ideas, come up with some places that would be nice. Do you want it glamping? Do you want something more upscale? Do you want something more outdoorsy? And I've spent a lot of time, researching and talking to people. I know probably hundreds of people that own retreat locations. So I kind of come up with a, 4 to 5 possibilities, and we talk about that, and we see what makes sense, and then we pick a date and a time, and we book that. And so at that point, we figure out, okay, what's the budget? What's the total cost going to be? And we make sure that the retreat is profitable. If it's for a business, it's profitable. Some corporations where people might want to do it as a team building retreat. In that case, it's not they're not going to charge people. They're just going to bring their teams. But we kind of look at the budget and figure out what the cost needs to be if they're selling the retreat. And then we put a plan together about how to fill the retreat, who should come. What I do sometimes on the way is people tend to have, since I am a coach, I kind of incorporate my coaching. So we always do, we take the retreat and we lock it in the future. So we do a timeline therapy where we actually go to the day after the retreat and we figure out how was the retreat, what happened, what did you feel? And then we kind of go in and lock that in. So your unconscious mind's already sees the possibility and knows how successful it's going to be. And if they have, sometimes people get a, they get stuck throughout the way or they get fearful. So we kind of, I might do some coaching through, limiting beliefs or getting them over that as well. And then once we have the retreat set and we have the date set, I'll help them put together the agenda. So like if they want to have hiking or, a sound bath or a yoga instructor, we figure that all out. We figure out if you want to give gifts to your attendees, usually you'll give some kind of a gift bag or something. I'll help them with that. And then we show up at the event and I do the support there. So I'll deal making sure, the food's ready, making sure the places are clean, making sure that everybody knows the schedule. If someone has a problem, one of the attendees has an issue, I'll deal with that so that the retreat host can keep dealing with everyone else. And I may take part in the retreat. I can do very, I can do Reiki or hypnotherapy or those kind of things as part of the retreat, or even just give a talk. And just make sure everybody has a great time. And then if they are selling up something from the retreat, I also help with the sales and the coaching through that.
So what are the sizes of these retreats? What would you say was like a small size all the way up to your larger size event?
I would say you could have, I mean, you could have a retreat with two people, but most of them are like six would probably be on the smaller end. I mean, I've been to retreats that have like 200 people, but they're more like almost more like conferences than retreats at that point. So typically the 6 to 30 or so is kind of an ideal size. I would say most of them are between 12 and 15, 12 and 20, somewhere in that range.
I think I really wanted to kind of elucidate that six more than anything, because I think people hear this and somehow they think that this has to be 30, 50, 70 people, when in reality that some of these smaller groups can have retreats. They can have successful retreats and with a much smaller size than I think is a common perception of what a retreat looks like.
The ones that had 6 to 15 were more valuable. You got to know everybody. It wasn't like you were just trying to meet, a few people, and you really had the deepest conversations, the biggest transformation, and the retreat host gets to spend a lot more time with people. So I actually like the small ones.
I know you had talked about a retreat was didn't necessarily have to be in Fiji or whatever, and I wouldn't consider my blocks experience a retreat, but I guess in a sense it could be. When you left from there, what did you take from that retreat that you'll use?
It was actually a transformation for me in that I felt like, okay, I can do this. There's no difference between me and them. And they're, you know what? I mean, even between the judges and the attendees, I mean, I think they're, we're all the same, very similar. We all have the same fears. I mean, we all have the same, question. We all have doubts, and yet we just all keep going. So that was really valuable. And then the connections I made. I mean, since we've been back like less than a week, and I've probably talk to at least 10 people. So
That was us. We had relationships that we left from there with. Chris does way more presentations and talking than I do, obviously. but has done presentations from relationships that we met during our experience at the blocks. We use products from, like, to this day, I use Beat Kvass, which was one of the contestants that was on our season was fermented foods. And we still have Beat Kvass daily in our fridge that we use from there. And so we took a lot of away from there outside of the knowledge, just the relationships and friendships.
So what I was going to say, and I know that we're close on time, but I could talk to you. We could do two or three more episodes probably. But what I mean this with the most respect, and I want to preface the question with that. We don't know each other well enough for you to know kind of my thought on this. But I very much into not having limiting beliefs, working to fight those sorts of things. Thinking about manifesting, I'm very proponent of that. But coming from a scientific background, like PhD in chemical engineering, to mindset coaching, right? A lot of people think that's kind of hokey. And it's like, what is this mindset coaching that you're thinking about offering? And not just talking about it, but actually now making it a business. So you're saying I'm doing retreat planning and mindset coaching. Did you get a lot of pushback from your chemical engineer and science?
I've got some, but actually less than I expected. It's funny. I actually I gave a talk recently at the American Institute of Chemical Engineers annual conference. And the talk was really on mindset. It was on releasing limiting beliefs. And it was a workshop. And you know, it was funny. There were about 25 to 30 people that showed up, which is good for a room because there's like, you know, 50 things going on at a time. And I thought it would be more women because actually the women in chemical engineering sponsored it. And it was like 20 men and 5 women. And it was kind of really surprising to me, but I had people tell me like, this is the best thing I've heard. You should ask them if you can give this as the keynote next year. And they were really open to it because they realize, I think people are realizing that, you know, if you just keep doing things the same way, you're just going to keep getting the same problems. And if I knew now what I knew as a chemical engineer, I could probably be running the company. I mean, it opened my eyes to things that would have been so valuable. Cause I think when you just deal with, you know, your conscious mind and the basic facts, you kind of reach that ceiling. And when you open up to all the other possibilities and dealing with your unconscious mind and your mindset, there's so many, you know, like, it's like, I see so many more things that I didn't even see before. But it's actually interesting because the American Institute of Chemical Engineering asked me to run for president. So I'm currently running for president.
Wow. Look at that. Imagine that. Cause I'm just thinking in my mind that you had to fight some of your own limiting beliefs to make that leap. And I'm, like I said, when I say that with all due respect, it's because I realized that I faced a lot of that switching from, I am anesthesia critical care to this day, but very scientific, very evidence-based, straight by the book. And so when I talk about mindsets or, you know, envisioning what your future is going to look like, building whatever path you want. And I took a very non-traditional career then and went into the med spa industry. I did get pushback, but a lot of that was also my own fears and my own beliefs of, am I going to state out loud what I'm actually going to do with the next phase of my life? And once I got over it, and now I'm very confident in it, but it took a while to get over that. So as I'm looking at your path and saying, my gosh, she's a PhD in chemical engineer to mindset coaching, which is it seems very opposite things.
I was a little bit myself, the same way myself. And, you know, and it's kind of like, I just saw the proof, you know, like when I got my Reiki certification, I was seeing things and knowing things that there was like no reason why I should know them. And it was like, okay, this actually does work because there was no reason why I should know this, you know, but I'm getting that information, you know, through an energy transfer. And
well, you're doing something right. So I'm really happy to have met you. Thank you for taking time to be on the podcast with us. Wish you the best of luck with your business. And we're certainly going to put all the links to your services in this podcast. So any of you listening that are interested in holding a retreat, definitely contact Lori and she'll help guide you through that process. And maybe Jerry and I will work with one with you. I hope at some point in the future.
We do an earthing retreat. We have lots of dirt.
Yeah, an earthing retreat. I don't know if you heard him because he said we have lots of dirt. We do. We have a lot of land at the farm.
That would be great.
Thank you again so much for taking time to be with us. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Jerry.
So we'll see you next week on another episode of Beauty and the Brain. Thank you for tuning in.
We'll see you soon.